The Green Bay Packers have parted ways with longtime veteran linebacker A.J. Hawk. We reflect on Hawk's career in Titletown and where the Packers go from here. We also listen to a combine interview with Oregon defensive lineman Eric Armstead. It's all coming up on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about the release of A.J. Hawk. Actually happened on Wednesday after our last episode of Railbird Central, so we haven't had a chance to talk about it yet on the show. Kind of knew it was going to come at some point, just a matter of when. You remember the Packers actually released, a week from today, released Brad Jones. And I know, kind of went through my mind, was like, okay, why didn't they release Hawk on the same day? You think they'd do it in one fell swoop. And actually, as it turns out, A.J. Hawk, if you've seen here at Cheesehead TV or anywhere, if you've paid attention to the story at all, he took to the internet to address, you know, fans, family, who interested parties, whoever wanted to listen. Hawk hosts his own video podcast. He releases it on YouTube. It's actually very professionally done, and he does a pretty good job. A lot of it is getting to know his guests. He's got a lot of interesting celebrity guests notable people who've done something in their career. It's been a range of guests that he's had on the show. Anyway, he used his platform to address, you know, the fans in the aftermath of his release and kind of timed it. So pretty much as soon as the news broke, he you know, released it and could, you know, talk to his fans directly and you know, kind of said the reason for the delay. He had actually known for almost a week ahead of time was that he was actually taking part in a charity event. I think he was doing it with other former Ohio State players. They were actually on a cruise ship or something like that. And so honestly, he didn't want to be caught at sea and have, you know, people there, you know, hear about it and wondering, oh, the Packers just blindsided you with this. Now, he actually knew it for a little while. And, you know, Hawk classified the Packers organization as being very classy in how they handled it. And, you know, the fact that he was taking part in this charity event, it goes to show how classy I think A.J. Hawk is. And, you know, his career never went the way you wanted it to, but at least he was a consummate professional. And the way A.J. Hawk handled himself, have nothing but respect for him. Sad the way it ended. I guess kind of sad the way it all transpired. But wish A.J. Hawk all the best. He is the Packers' all-time leading tackler in franchise history. That will be his claim to fame. And where he stands in Packers lore right now. I think there's a lot of talk about, was he a bust? A.J. Hawk was the number 5 overall draft pick in 2006, and I understand it. When you pick a player that high, you have high expectations. You know, it's not just a first-round draft choice with A.J. Hawk. This is a top 5 overall draft pick, and he was so good coming out of Ohio State. I still to this day wonder where the athleticism went, because you look at him at Ohio State and you're like, wow, this guy's a player. And he you know, here we are just a few days away from the combine. Even when A.J. Hawk took part in the NFL combine, you know, his numbers were good, you know, respectable at worst. You know, it wasn't like he had this, you know, here we are thinking about the recently completed combine, and we've talked about how Paul Dawson, inside linebacker from TCU, had such a poor performance. AJ Hawk wasn't even near that kind of category. He looked good. I don't know whatever happened. The drop off in athleticism was so steep, and it happened rather quickly. I mean, it happened gradually over time. But I think once he got to the NFL, I don't know if players were just that much fat. I mean, that's part of it, but there was a drop off regardless. Still, had he been picked later, had AJ Hawk been, you know, drafted anywhere outside the first round, basically, you know, he wouldn't have been thought so much as a bust. And, you know, fact, you know, you get 9 seasons out of a player, that's, you know, just about as good as it gets for a linebacker. Yeah, sure, there's a few more that, you know, go on to play a little bit longer, things like that. But, you know, to be the franchise's all-time leading tackler, that's quite an accomplishment. I don't care who you are, you know. It's weird. It's really weird. The amount of pressure that is placed on first round draft choices in the NFL is unbelievable. The drop off in pressure from the number 32 overall pick to the number 33 overall pick, it's like it drops off a cliff. It's just, you know, that if you have the title of first round draft pick, there will be expectations placed upon you that are very, very difficult to live up to. And, you know, many do and many don't. It's you know, take a look at Derek Sherrod, last overall draft choice in the first round, the year he was drafted, 2011. I mean, had he just been picked one pick later, wouldn't have been. Yeah, there's expectations. I think, you know, the expectations gradually get lower every round. It's not like there's no expectations for a second round draft choice, but there's definitely a lot less. And, you know, I think even if you take a look at the 7th round of the draft, I think there's another steep drop off between draft pick and undrafted players. You know, if a team actually invests a pick into you, there's a little bit more expectation there as opposed to, you know, the guys they sign off the street. Because if you cut them, it's really, I mean, you almost don't think twice about cutting an undrafted, you know, draft rookie. It's just like, oh, it didn't work out. Oh, okay. It's too bad. I mean, Hawk, like I said, consummate pro, and had a good, not great career with the Green Bay Packers, if you don't consider the expectations placed upon him, basically from the outside. I don't know about what he, you know, kind of expectations he had for himself or the organization had for him, but, you know, again, to be a starter for as long as he was, you know, I think people kind of make fun of, I think one of his best traits was his durability and his leadership, and people make fun and be like, well, I mean, what does that matter? You know, like, it's all about athleticism and making plays, and I fully admit AJ Hawk basically, you know, didn't have those things or didn't do those things. But, you know, when it's not like he never, ever made a play, or, you know, among the 1,000 tackles he had. I mean, how many of those, you know, were nice stops for tackles for a loss or a gain of 0 yards or a gain of 1 yard? I mean, the plays that A.J. Hawk did make, I think a lot of it had to do with his durability. And because, I mean, when you're durable, when you're available, it helps you in so many ways in that, you know, he's out there for practice every single day. He's always out there learning. He's always out there preparing for the opponent. And I think that goes under the radar because I mean, when you're injured, when you're on the sidelines, you're not practicing, you're not learning what the other team is trying to do to you. So when AJ Hawk does make those tackles, I think that was so big because he knew exactly the game plan every week, and you know, just over the accumulation of knowledge over time for being in the Packers defensive system for how many years. I mean, you know, AJ Hawk knew it inside and out. You could see him out there. He was the guy who would relay the play call to the rest of the defense. He had the speaker in his helmet. You can see him out there lining up the defensive linemen in front of him. He knew what he was doing. He helped out others. He was a leader in that regard. He was a 3-time playoff captain for the Packers, and that is a voted upon by your peers, which I think, you know, is an ultimate sign of respect in the NFL, how your peers feel about you. And they, you know, felt enough about Hawk to do that. I thought he was his most productive from about the years 2010 to 2012. That was, you know, his arguably the best year was in 2010 when he helped the Packers win the Super Bowl, and he was named to the Pro Bowl as an injury replacement. And considering it was, you know, an injury replacement, I don't think it was entirely undeserving. It's not like he was voted as a Pro Bowl starter or even as a reserve. It actually took him, you know, an injury to get in or to be nominated. Of course, the Packers played in the Super Bowl that year, so he didn't actually play in the Pro Bowl game itself. But what he was able to do, if you think back to the Super Bowl season, A.J. Hawk, you know, he ended up playing a ton of games, starting a ton of games for the Packers. He actually did not start game one, week one of the 2010 season. You remember this was a time period when Nick Barnett was part of the team, Brandon Chalar and a few others. And you know, it kind of looked like maybe A.J. Hawk is being phased out here, but the Packers made a switch. He starts week two and ends up starting the whole rest of the season. And, of course, the Packers end up having, you know, injuries at the inside linebacker position, multiple injuries. You know, Nick Barnett goes on injured reserve, lost for the year. And you know, Desmond Bishop actually ends up being a starting linebacker next to Hawk. And I thought those guys held down the fort real well. And, you know, I thought Hawk played the best he's ever played in a Packers uniform. And I mean, you know, obviously the Packers go on to win the Super Bowl, kind of appropriate, right? And I thought he played about the same level of play 2011, 2012, and kind of started dropping off from there. 2013 drop off, 2014 steeper drop off, and you know, I know, I understand why the Packers did it. I would have done it. I would have released him too. You know, one of my favorite stories about AJ Hawk, if you just want a story about him, a few years ago, and I mean, if you're a Packers fan, you've probably heard about it. You've probably seen it. He was caught on camera giving like his teammates the middle finger. You know, it wasn't like it was even directed toward an opponent, directed toward the fans. He was just joking around with his teammates on the sideline, and I think it was Fox. It was an NFC game, so the Fox cameras actually caught him on video. And, of course, everybody's talking about it because, you know, here's a highly paid professional athlete flipping the bird, and everybody flips out when that happens. And, you know, I think people understood when it was directed towards his teammates that it wasn't that big a deal. But still, I remember hearing, and it wasn't even that long ago, A.J. Hawk, as part of a radio interview, talks about how he can't believe that people saw that. And I'm just wondering to myself, like, what is going through your mind? Like, there is about 5 zillion different cameras at an NFL game. Are you really surprised that one camera didn't catch you doing that. I think he just feels that, you know, maybe when it's when a play is not in action, you know, when there's an actual play going on, that, you know, perhaps if he does something between plays, a camera isn't necessarily focused on him, but it just so happened to be that they caught him doing it. And I don't know. It just always struck me as funny that AJ Hawk was that oblivious to the multi-million dollar industry that is the NFL and 500 cameras. Then nobody would have seen that besides his teammates who it was directed to. Anyway, it's a favorite AJ Hawk story. I think it's funny. Again, wish him all the best. And that's kind of your recap of AJ Hawk's time with the Packers organization. So where do the Packers go from here? They will gain about $3.5 million in cap space in 2015 for releasing AJ Hawk. And I, you know, this is obviously one of the impetuses for doing so. He will cost over, I forget the exact number, it's over $1 million in dead space, though. He's actually going to cost over $1 million against the salary cap, regardless of, you know, even though he's gone, he's still going to count some. I think the fact that he cleared up $3.5 million kind of, you know, makes up for that, but still. The Packers are now roughly $30 million under the 2015 salary cap. I've heard it's even a little bit more than that, which should be enough, which I know is going to be enough to sign players like Randall Cobb and Brian Bulaga without any problems. Now, you can go from there and wonder how much money is going to be left over to sign the rest of the Packers free agents, not to mention their draft choices, not to mention anybody they may or may not pursue from outside the organization in free agency. But anyway, the question, you know, I think becomes now, where do the Packers go from here at the inside linebacker position? I actually got in the aftermath of Hawk's release, talking about this with people on social media, and one person responded to me, and they were very specific, responding about Hawk's release, saying, I think this says three things. The Packers are going to select an inside linebacker in the first round. B, they're going to take another inside linebacker in the middle rounds of the draft. And C, they're going to go sign an inside linebacker in free agency. And let me tell you, I wouldn't be surprised, I guess, if that happened. I would be surprised if all three of those things happen, I guess, all at once. I'm just saying here, I'm not guaranteeing anything, but it's possible the starters at inside linebacker are already on the roster right now. I think so many people are looking for this inside linebacker taken in the first round. And it may very well turn out that could happen. I'm not dismissing that possibility at all. But, you know, I think the Packers could not draft an inside linebacker in the first round or not draft an immediate starter. It's very possible Sam Barrington and Carl Bradford are your starters at inside linebacker in 2015. Like I said, I'm not guaranteeing this. And, you know, I obviously have a lot more confidence in Sam Barrington, you know, seeing as he did start about half the season and played fairly well. I think there's still some doubt about his, you know, long-term status with the Packers organization. But anyway, he's a nice player on the rise. A lot less, you know, certainty about Carl Bradford, who, you know, basically had his redshirt year this past year. He was the only player on the roster, on the opening day roster, who was never active a single game this past season. And made the transition from outside linebacker. I mean, that, you know, Carl Bradford has a lot to prove, not just a lot, a ton to prove in many different areas and facets and whatever. But, I mean, this is also a guy who I think is definitely, you know, talented and showed, you know, why the Packers drafted him this past year. Man, I threw out the question on Twitter before the show asking, you know, Twitter users who they think the starting pair of inside linebackers will be in 2015. And here's just what, you know, random Packers fans think from on social media. Nick Claxton on Twitter, NEC524, says Barrington and someone not currently on the team. Matt Johnson on Twitter says Barrington and Clay. A rookie won't start right away, and we won't sign anyone. So there's a person for Clay Matthews starting an inside linebacker. A lot of Barrington and somebody not currently on the team. Kevin, one of our longtime Railbird listeners here, K Lamb Cheesehead on Twitter. Barrington and Matthews, Thomas Bradford and a draft pick will be the main backups. Emilio Steven on Twitter says Barrington and Anthony. I'm assuming Stephon Anthony. Jonathan Murphy on Twitter. Clay and Kendricks. Eric Kendricks. Billy Wesley on Twitter. Barrington and either Kendricks or Dawson. Junaid Hussein on Twitter. Barrington and McKinney with Matthews rotating in. Chris White on Twitter. Barrington and a combo of Clay Matthews and Stephon Anthony. So anyway, lots of responses and lots of people weighing in with different answers here. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of different answers if you're projecting some sort of rookie to step in and start. But I mean, there's a lot of different rookies from Eric Kendricks to Stephon Anthony to Paul Dawson that we've seen. Some people think Clay Matthews is, you know, going to be there and some don't. I'll tell you what, folks, do not expect Clay Matthews to be a full-time starter at inside linebacker unless, you know, somebody were to get hurt, you know, this upcoming season. I think you're going to see him start for one at outside linebacker more than the inside, just because he's such a good pass rusher, and that's where they want to utilize his skills the most. I just think they'll utilize him a lot like they did this year. You know, even when Clay Matthews was playing inside linebacker, we're just talking the second half of the season. I don't think his playing time even reached about 30% at inside linebacker. We're talking the percentage of snaps he took there, somewhere in the 20s. So really, not that much. I mean, he definitely helped out there, and especially on running downs, and I think he was a huge help. But don't expect Clay Matthews to be a full-time inside linebacker anytime soon. It's, you know, a lot of different opinions out there about who it's going to be. Personally, I don't think the Packers can pass up Eric Kendricks if he's there. Something I've mentioned before and I continue to believe, he may be the best pure inside linebacker in this year's draft class, ahead of guys like Stephon Anthony, ahead of Paul Dawson, ahead of Denzel Perryman. It's not like I don't like these guys. I like Denzel Perryman, but I don't like him above Eric Kendricks. I think if Kendricks is there at number 30 overall, he's going to be really, really hard to pass up, because I think he's your, you know, prototypical three-down linebacker, and he's definitely a leader. You know, he's really impressive when you talk to him, and smart and savvy. I think people will like that for sure. And that's what you want out of a guy, out of a first-round draft pick. Not a lot of risk there, but I think he can be a real good one as well. The Packers going to want to avoid, if possible, you know, picking a guy like A.J. Hawk in that, you know, a guy who may you know, look fine at the combine and has all the measurables and looks good on film, but, you know, somehow drops off. I don't know how you can predict those kind of things. I don't know how you could predict, you know, that A.J. Hawk would have dropped off like he did, but, you know, obviously the Packers want to avoid that. But anyway, there's a lot of thoughts about A.J. Hawk and where the Packers go from here. It's time for
Packers News of the Day.
On Thursday, yesterday, perhaps even it happened before and I just, you know, hadn't found out about it yet. The Packers have apparently signed a linebacker from the Indoor Football League, not the Arena League, which is kind of like a minor league to the Arena League. But anyway, his name is Josh Francis, and this is according to his team, the Wichita Falls Nighthawks, in Texas. This has not been confirmed by the Packers or the league's transaction wire yet. I'm kind of surprised it didn't happen yesterday, but the team actually went out and tweeted all this stuff or posted it on social media, especially on their Facebook page. They actually have a picture of Josh Francis signing a contract with the Packers, apparently. And, you know, I don't know why they would make this up if it weren't true. I suppose maybe Francis has to pass a physical, and maybe that's why it hasn't, you know, happened yet. Maybe he's got to travel to Green Bay, pass all that, and when that happens, it'll become official. I just surprised because, I mean, reports started coming out, I think actually Wednesday, that this was going to happen. He's spent some time in the indoor football leagues. Obviously a developmental prospect here. He played at West Virginia for 2 years. I think his junior and senior years, 2011, 2012. So he's actually been out of college for a few years now. Was a JUCO transfer. So started his college career at a JUCO, transferred to a Division I, you know, FBS program. What's going to happen here with Josh Francis is he's going to get an opportunity. By no means is this kid a lock to make the Packers 53-man roster, so don't read into it like that. He's just, you know, it's the off season. Rosters are now at 90 players. There's very little risk involved. I highly doubt the Packers gave him any guaranteed money or very, you know, maybe a tiny signing bonus if he got anything, and I doubt an unproven player like him, he got any. So he's basically just getting a shot, and, you know, they can release him at any time without, you know, any salary cap hits or anything like that. So basically, you know, don't be like, oh, yeah, Packers looking at the Arena League now. You know, chill. You know, they're looking for basically a guy who probably is not going to be a starter, but hopefully will provide depth. Maybe he'll be a special teams demon, and who knows, maybe he exceeds expectations. But just interesting. Came across this on social media the other day, and we'll see when it actually becomes official. But now, like I teased before, had a lot of talk here about the linebackers. Now it's time for our
expert interview.
I got an interview from the NFL Combine I wanted to share. So, you know, I spent 4 days in Indianapolis and collected all this audio and interviews and things like that. So I want to share some of this stuff with you because I've got over 100 interviews. And I thought this one was interesting. Took part in, not just me, many people took part in the press conference with Oregon defensive lineman Eric Armstead. Humongous individual. He's 6'7", 292 pounds, and a potential first-round draft pick. And I don't know if the Packers would select him if he's available. I definitely think you have to think about it because he's just massive. He can be a run stuffer as well as a pass rusher. And even if he doesn't get to the passers, he's just so massive at 6'7", 292. He can just throw his arms up and bat some passes down, if nothing else. Just an interesting guy with loads of potential, former basketball player. He talks about all of these things. So just wanted to share this interview from the Combine, about 5 minutes long or so, to get you a little bit better idea of this guy. He's going to be, probably for round one, round two guy regardless. So he's going to be a guy you hear from in the NFL. And whether the Packers take him or not, and just let you get to know him a little bit. Eric Armstead, defensive lineman from Oregon. You'll hear a couple, ambient noises as I'm actually holding my microphone and every once in a while trying to jot down a note at the same time. I apologize, but I think the audio quality is still pretty good regardless. Listen in.
At this point, they should draft me because I feel I'm the best defensive lineman in this draft. I think I have a unique skill set. I'm a versatile defensive lineman who've done a lot of things at Oregon, moving all across the line. I think I have, like I said, a unique skill set that with coaching that can develop a lot more and turn myself into one of the best defensive linemen in the league. Doing what my coaches tell me to do. I'm a team guy. Whatever they ask me to do, that's what I did there at Oregon. I got my job done well.
Beyond the versatility, what do you see as your greatest strengths on a football field?
My athleticism combined with my football IQ over this past year, not playing basketball anymore. I got a lot more in the film room, diagnosing plays and things like that, that allowed me to make a lot of extra plays out there. And I think combined that with my skill set, continue to work on that and try to hone that skill has been very helpful.
You said you're
a better player inside or outside.
I think I'm versatile in the 4-3 scheme. I think I'm an outside guy on first and second down who can move inside and rush over the guards on third down. I think in the 3-4, I'm a 5-tech, a 4-tech, or a 4-eye. That's what I've been doing at Oregon. And I'll rush probably inside on third down there too.
What do you expect to run?
I expect to run a 4-8 to 4-9 range. So that, I think that would be a good day for me.
What was it that great from the
I submitted my paperwork. I got a second-round grade before all the bowl games.
What was it that caused your brother to retire from the NFL?
He had health problems. That's, his situation. I'm not going to talk about that. Chip was an excellent coach. He was an offensive-minded guy. Spent a little bit of time with him, of course, recruiting, passing through in Oregon. But, I spent a lot of time with Jerry Azzanero, who is now with the Eagles. He's an awesome guy as well. Yeah, for sure. My brother not being able to play anymore, I feel I'm trying to carry on that torch. Like I said, going through recruiting in high school, I was following up after him. I wanted to be like him. I really started playing football when I fell in love with the game. Early on when I was little, my brother, hearing his name, he's a big-time recruit in high school, and I wanted to be just like him. And I fell in love with football, and he's been helping me ever since, and, kind of paved the way for me. And, I'm definitely trying to continue that.
What are some things that you've learned from him about playing in the NFL or just the process in general?
He's taught me a lot. Throughout this whole season, he was watching film with me, giving me tips on guys, studying film with me, trying to get some cadence tips, working with me, studying offensive linemen, trying to study what they do all throughout the season. My time in San Diego, we've been working on my get-off and technique and things like that. They're going to help me and push me to the next level. No, I've never been to New England when he was there. I had my own season, kind of far away, so I've never been out there.
Was it hard to go basketball?
Yeah, it was tough. I love basketball, but I felt like it was very beneficial for me. I love this game of football, and I really wanted to master my craft in this game. So I put down basketball just to focus on this. Basketball was a finesse sport. I love the physicality and the violence of football. Like I said, I fell in love with the game at a young age. It was just time to choose one. I chose football because I love the game.
So many basketball players play the opposite side of the ball, the tight end. This is the comparison you get a lot. Is it the physicality the reason that drew you to play defense?
Yeah, I love the aggressiveness of the position. I played online in high school. Didn't really like it. I was good at it, but I love defense. I'm trying to turn myself into the best defensive lineman I can be.
Depending on what you read or who you ask, you're viewed as maybe the 10th overall pick, maybe the 40th overall pick. I mean, do you have any sort of idea where you might end up?
No, I don't. I'm going to control what I can control. We're just going out here, excuse me, working as hard as possible to prepare, talking to these teams, talking to these people, you know, just trying to be myself, you know, try to convey and express, you know, who I am to them, what kind of player I am, you know, let the chips fall where they may. Yeah, they wore us down. We couldn't get off the field on third down, which created long drives, which wears your defense down, you know, creates some problems. You know, that was definitely a key point in that game.
Given your height, you talk about athleticism, leverage, how do you try to use that to your advantage?
Using your length is huge at my height, of course. You know, separating guys, not letting them get to your body. Using your weapons to your advantage, that's definitely a key part to my game.
Do you think there are things to translate from the basketball court, your athleticism, what you need in basketball, fighting for position, being quick, those movements translate to football as well?
Of course. I feel like I'm the football player I am today because all those basketball workouts I did back in the day with my dad definitely turned me into, you know, who I am today, of course, with the athleticism part. And like I said, you know, that was helpful for me at a young age, playing both, try to balance those things. I feel like basketball helped me play football. Football got me tougher and more aggressive in on the basketball court.
One more for Eric. What front or what technique do you feel like you're better suited to play?
I'm versatile. I feel like I can play in a 4-3 or a 3-4. I can play strong side in a 4-3 and move inside and rush over the guards. And in 3-4, I'm a 5-tech or a 4-tech. And then, you know, whatever passing situation they need from me. My favorite move in basketball? Did a lot of moves. Probably a spin move in the post, though. That was my go-to move.
So there you go, an interview with Eric Armstead of the University of Oregon, potential first-round draft choice. Be interesting to see. I think the Packers would definitely consider him. I think there's probably maybe less of an interest because they took a similar type of player in Dayton Jones two seasons ago. Tall, kind of five-tech defensive end. I actually think Eric Armstead has the higher ceiling than Dayton Jones. You know, if I were to have my choice between them, I'd probably actually take Eric Armstead. But regardless, I mean, the Packers have already invested so much into Dayton Jones. It would be tough to draft another similar kind of guy. I've seen comparisons of Armstead to Calais Campbell of the Arizona Cardinals, which is an interesting one. Obviously, if he were to, you know, live up to that kind of expectation or play at that kind of level, he would definitely be a really good player. But anyway, just wanted to share that, something from the combine. Interesting guy and has a lot of potential at the very least. It's now time for
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers here on a Friday. Wide receivers Jared Aberderis and Jeff Janis are taking part on the Battle on Bago Ice Fishing Tournament, billed as the largest ice fishing tournament in the Midwest. This according to Packer Events, at least to with the wide receivers attending, which is ran by a former Packers offensive lineman, Bill Ferrario, by the way. He posted on social media that all these, you know, not just the current players, but a slew of former Packers players taking part in it as well, including, you know, former wide receiver Bill Schrader. Interesting that they're doing this today. Our Packers wide receivers out on the ice fishing on a Friday during the off season. So kind of cool. Just wanted to share that. Other news that happened yesterday, by the way, that I forgot to mention, the Packers announced their tailgate tour. It's taking place in mid-April, making five stops across the state of Wisconsin, if I can remember them all off the top of my head. We're talking Menominee, Wisconsin, Prairie du Chien, Baraboo, Elkhorn, and Sheboygan, I believe. So if you live near one of those cities, the Packers will be coming to a town near you in the month of April. The current Packers players taking part are tight end Andrew Corliss, along with defensive backs Micah Hyde and Casey Hayward, and a handful of Packers alumni, including Lombardi-era players Jerry Kramer and Hall of Famer Dave Robinson, some more recent ones from the Holmgren-era Packers, Antonio Freeman and Bill Schrader taking part, Gilbert Brown as well, so... check that out. We got the details at Cheesehead TV, so go check that out as well. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us here on the show today. We'll be back again on Monday, once again, talking some Packers football. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time here at Cheesehead TV. My call to action, if you have not before, have given us a rating on iTunes, please do so. We really appreciate it when you do that. If you like the show, that helps gets the word out and makes it even more popular and more people listening. And that's, like I say all the time, there's no paywall at Cheesehead TV. There's no premium content. Everything is free. So if you could do us a solid and do one little thing, give us a rating on iTunes. We'd appreciate it if you haven't already. If you have, thank you. But next episode on Monday, we'll see you, folks. On behalf of everybody at Cheesehead TV, I'm Brian Kirvu. We'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called Sirens by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.
Is it gonna be